Hi folks, it's your host Harmit, and you're listening to Tobin Talks.
So, I guess just the first thing about, Environment Machine Shop that I wanted to ask is, what drew you to the idea of working with water as a subject for an installation?
You know, I think it was just a bit of chance. Growing up, I spent a lot of time on my bicycle riding trails, and most of the trails in the city are, of course, along the rivers here. Mm-hmm. So, I just think I was, you know, I've only spent a lot of time kind of in their proximity. And then, you know, I think some of it was just play. Like, I had, you know, some equipment on my desk, and I had, I guess at the time when I was doing this work, I was at the University of Windsor in a bio art program. So we worked with scientific tools and processes for a more artistic sort of output or product. So I just had some of that kind of equipment in my area. And so one of them was this petri dish. And so I think I just started mixing things, and water was giving me some interesting results. And I think just sitting on the connections that I already had, and especially in Windsor too, the Detroit River is such a major landscape feature that defines that city's boundary. Mm-hmm. So it all just kind of came together.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess just like what were some of those results when like you were testing water in petri dishes?
So a lot of times the petri dishes ended up just being vessels to hold the water more than anything. So mm-hmm. a lot of the testing, I wouldn't say, maybe testing is the wrong word. A lot of it was, it's maybe more of like presentation in a different way. I think what the show is bringing is maybe less about actually testing the water and more about just getting people to connect with the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, I mean, I don't know, like any time that you read a book about like Winnipeg history, for example, it always starts with like, you know, this has been the location of like a trading post for thousands of years at the you know, the juncture of the Forks and Assiniboine rivers. Mm-hmm. So obviously, like, the two bodies of water that connect here are so fundamental to this, the history of this area. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like I definitely appreciate that as like as a goal to like get people to connect with water more, because it doesn't seem like something that like I sort of take for granted personally.
Yeah, and it almost kind of frustrated me too that you know, the general attitude of Winnipeggers towards the Red River is that it's, you know, it's polluted, it's bad, it's unsafe. And I think a lot of that just comes from the sight of it. You know, it's a very dark, pretty opaque color. And mm-hmm. I think that turns people off right away. And that doesn't necessarily mean polluted. Of course, obviously there are some issues with, sewage dumping and, you know, nutrient loading, but, like the river isn't this like gross cesspool that we sort of make it out to be. And I think part of what my goal with this exhibit is to pull some of the water out, let you sort of see it in a way that's not just whipping by you in the river, but it's sort of here for you to look at in a, you know, like a safe way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like that sort of gets in like what you were saying, about, like your frustrations with the attitude toward the Red River, of it being like a cesspool, is that like in the sort of descriptive material for the exhibit, you mentioned that Winnipeg's rivers are an important ecosystem that's often mistreated. So how did you intend the machine shop like to reflect the social critique that this alludes to?
Yeah, so I guess this work came from an exhibit that was supposed to be my final thesis show for my MFA, my Master's of Fine Arts. And the title of that, I feel like I'm going to butcher the name a little bit, but it essentially was an interdisciplinary approach to generating ecological empathy.
Yeah, it does sound like an MFA title.
And so I think that was sort of my main goal was to mm-hmm. to present opportunities for empathy.
Okay, so like I guess how is what you've learned in your architectural studies guided your artistic practice?
Oh, that's a good one. For me, they both really play off of each other quite a bit. Oftentimes in an artistic practice, you have a little bit more freedom of expression, I think. At the end of the day, architecture, has to serve a client, and they have certain requests, and it can make, getting your pure vision out there a little bit challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And also too, oftentimes in architecture, you have a client who's guiding your direction based on costs, and with an art practice, you don't necessarily have those same constraints. So for instance, I think my art practice maybe informs the PhD a little bit in some ways, because mm-hmm. I'm focusing on using DIY tools and approaches to create spaces where biomaterial research for architecture can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mostly to deal with, trying to empower communities or groups that might not have access to the funding needed for expensive machinery. And so what's been interesting about putting up a show like Environment Machine Shop is it's kind of given me a chance to field test some of the basic components like little pumps or interfaces or buttons. I've been able to kind of pressure test some of these items and see how far they'll go before they break.
Mm-hmm.
You get interesting conversations where people have to interact with it and you see if things work or not. So it's kind of a living lab to test out some of the strategies that I'd like to implement in the architecture side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the interactiveness of it is quite interesting to me, especially the pollution piano. Mm-hmm. I was curious because, like, in the description, I think if I'm remembering correctly, I think it mentioned something about how like distilled water can't produce that. Like, I'm not really quite sure how it works, like, mechanically.
Right.
But so, like, how do you, like, generate, like, the distinct tones, like, of the individual keys there?
Sure. So I guess conductivity testing is a pretty standard water quality test that doesn't necessarily point you to specifics, but it gives you a general overview of what's happening in a particular water sample. And so distilled water has virtually nothing in it other than water, and so that itself is not that conductive. What gives it conductivity is mostly minerals that are suspended in the water that have some conductive properties. And so many water samples will just have some natural ability to conduct electricity, but once you start seeing higher levels of conductivity, which is basically how easily an electrical current will pass through the water. So once you get a higher or less resistance, I guess, or more electricity can pass through, it means there's more conductive things. And so that's typically a signal that there's heavy metals or other things that shouldn't be in that sample. So with the pollution piano, I've tied the level of conductivity to a pitch. So the more conductive a sample is, basically the more salt or heavy metals are in the sample, the higher the pitch will be. Mm-hmm. So in that way, you're able to quickly hear between two samples. So it's not giving you a number or like a mineral that's in there, but you can just quickly tell, okay, sample one is, much lower pitch than sample two. So there's something kind of funny happening here.
Like, were you collected the samples in different locations along the river, right? So, like, were there any particular locations where, like, there was more more pollution than less, like more potentially metal content?
Right. Off the top of my head, I can't remember exactly, but I know most of the samples were pretty similar, which kind of surprised me. So the pitches that we were getting were all pretty consistent. There was a few that are a little bit out. I first did this exhibit, or was testing it in Windsor along their river, and I did notice quite a bit more change between the samples. So yeah, that's just kind of an interesting finding. And the way the piano works, I don't really get to choose the tones. It just sort of comes with the samples. So this rendition happened to produce a fairly consistent tone across the keys.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want, like, I, the word random doesn't really capture it, but I definitely, there's something that draws me to art where, like, the process of making it is not, like, determined in advance. It's not, like, predictable.
Yeah, it's like I've made the tool and you don't know what, you know, what it's going to play.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yes, my name is Yale Michaels. My pronouns are he, him, his. My position is I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Biochemistry and Medical Genetics at the University of Manitoba, and I'm also a scientist at the Paul Albrechtsen Research Institute, Cancer Care Manitoba.
Okay, cool. Thank you. So the first question I had is, why did you choose to go into your line of research?
I've always been really interested in this idea that all the cells in our body came from one single stem cell. And this one single stem cell was not only able to divide and replicate itself hundreds of thousands and millions of times, but it could also differentiate to become all the different types of tissues that make our bodies work and function. And so understanding how this one stem cell with one set of genetic instructions programmed in its DNA can know how to perform all of these different tasks and functions has been something that's really interesting to me and has drawn me to want to work in this area.
Awesome. Thank you. So could you please tell me about your past and present work and the importance of it?
Sure. So my research career started actually when I was a student growing up here in Manitoba. I volunteered in a couple of different labs at the University of Manitoba, and the first one was with a professor named Gunnar Valdemarsson. And I started out working on how cells communicate with each other. And since that time, my research has moved in many different directions. As an undergraduate at Harvard University, I was really interested in understanding the origins of the first cells, so how cells emerged from the prebiotic world, and so did research to try to understand that. When I was a graduate student, I was interested in new technologies that were emerging at the time to allow scientists to be able to genetically engineer DNA inside of living cells, a technology that's called CRISPR-Cas9 that recently was awarded the Nobel Prize to Jennifer Doudna and Emmanuel Charpentier. And in my postdoctoral fellowship, so my most recent research experience before coming to University of Manitoba, I was working in a lab that was trying to use stem cells to create immune cells that could be used to treat cancer. And that work that I was doing as a postdoctoral fellow really forms the basis of what my research group is working on here at the University of Manitoba. And I would say there's two streams of research happening within the lab. One is trying to understand this question of how stem cells know and understand how to become different types of cells and tissues. And then the other type of question that we're interested in is, how can we use living cells to treat diseases? And our focus at the moment is on cancer, but I think long-term, living cells can be used as medicines for a variety of different diseases, including cancer and autoimmune diseases. So, you know, these are the two main focus areas of work in my laboratory.
Awesome. Thank you. So could you tell me about the project that received funding from the NSERC?
Yeah, sure. So so NSERC is a funding body that supports research in natural sciences and engineering. So this the project that my lab proposed for this funding competition was to try to understand a type of stem cell called the blood stem cell or a hematopoietic stem cell, which I think are really amazing because this very small number of cells is able to divide and replenish itself, but also to produce all the red blood cells that carry oxygen throughout our bodies, all the platelets that allow us to clot when we have a cut, and all the immune cells that protect us against infectious disease. So this small and mighty population of blood stem cells is responsible for making all of these different downstream types of cells that are critical for our normal healthy function. But the way in which this single stem cell knows how to choose which one of those downstream types of cells to become is not fully understood. And so what this grant application is about is using different types of genetic technologies to understand how a blood stem cell can choose what it's going to, what type of cell it's going to become. How does it choose to become a red blood cell instead of an immune cell? How does it choose to become an immune cell instead of a platelet? So that's really the central focus of this grant is trying to use genetic engineering technologies to learn how that choice actually happens.
Interesting. Thank you. So what is your ultimate goal as a researcher?
Oh, this is a great question. I guess maybe I can give two answers to this. So one of my main goals as a researcher is to help train the next generation of scientists. So students at various levels, whether it's undergraduates, graduate students, or postdoctoral fellows or staff members, to create an environment where they can become better scientists. This is one of my main goals. And the second is to be able to understand the way that cells work in sufficient detail that we can actually engineer and program those cells to do useful things. So if we can learn how a stem cell chooses what type of blood cell it's going to become, we might actually be able to manipulate that process in a way that's favorable, that allows us to produce types of cells that are useful or interesting. And you know, I should be careful what I say here because NSERC explicitly funds what would be called natural science research. They don't fund health research. So this project, this grant which we're awarded in my lab, the focus there is really about understanding the biology system works. But in other work in our lab, which is not funded by this NSERC grant, we're interested in engineering living cells as medicines. And there the goal, sort of the ultimate goal, would be to be able to create safe, effective, and affordable living medicines that can help patients in Manitoba, Canada, and around the world.
Awesome. Thank you.
So I just have to give this disclaimer so I don't get in trouble with NSERC for them, okay, them thinking that we're using the grant for doing health research.
Okay, sure. So is there any message that you want to convey to the university community?
I think that there are, so many interesting and exciting research programs happening here at the University of Manitoba. And for, you know, I know a lot of your readership would be students, just to encourage them to reach out and to try to get involved in it. You know, attending courses is a great way to get a foundation in the fundamental ideas of a particular field, but the best way to really learn in my perspective is by doing. So, you know, there's no better experience than actually getting into a lab, getting involved with a research project, getting your hands dirty with experiments. So I think that there are so many good opportunities for that here at the University of Manitoba that I would encourage people to look for those.
Sounds good. So that's it for the questions I had. Is there anything that you wanted to add in or talk about?
I think no. I mean, I think those are good. I think you covered things nicely. Out of curiosity, what's your plan? Is the idea for this article to kind of profile some of the grants, some of the like U of M researchers that were awarded these NSERC grants? And out of curiosity, how did you find out that I didn't see it like a public announcement. How did you find out that my lab got an NSERC grant?
So for the first question, I'm probably planning to keep the article entirely about you. So I would start with your project. So I would start with your project that was like the NSERC thing, and then I would cover like your other projects, past stuff, things like that. So yeah. And I found out about this because NSERC had published like a directory type thing of their 2024 discovery grant recipients. And so I searched for the ones from the University of Manitoba, and I came up with like a huge list, and out of all of them, I thought yours was the most interesting. So
I'm very flattered and honored that you wanted to write about ours. Hopefully the answers I gave were helpful for that.
You can listen to Tobin Talks anytime on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you name it. And you can pick up a copy of the Manitoban from stands all throughout campus. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you then.